Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeehaw! Off and running on this rainy Friday here in the city was a challenge for everyone to get here today. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, bring you hopefully till 6 p.m. when we'll go to pregame coverage of LSU baseball, a 6:30 first pitch scheduled at the box. We'll be keeping tabs on that to see if game one against the Arkansas Razorbacks starts on time. Right now, not looking too great, Jeff.
All right, my question is whether you're going to keep the cowboy energy throughout the show. Is that going to be the theme?
Let's ride right now. That's how I'm looking at it.
It would be very Texas themed, and we have some Texas stuff to talk about. So I mean,
I'm really pumped up. Tomorrow it's Saturday, and we get to go to Saints camp.
That is true.
See hopefully the rookies in action.
Hopefully it's not raining. It's supposed to rain. That would be a lot less fun.
We'll be in the indoor facility, though. I'm not worried about that.
Exactly. That's not where I want to be. Like 50 degree air conditioning. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
Oh, we have a update from the National Weather Service. Charlie's let me know. We're going to go back to the WWL newsroom with an update from Chris Miller. It's Miller time. What you got, Chris?
Flash flood warning for the South Shore, Jefferson, New Orleans, Plaquemines, St. Bernard Parish, also St. Charles Parish from all that heavy rain. That flash flood warning in effect till around 6 p.m., I believe, from the word is from the National Weather Service.
Gotcha. Thank you, Chris.
You got it. Actually, no, that's until 7:15, so they've extended it about a little more than an hour. So there you go. Flash flood warning through 7:15 tonight.
It is nasty out there, folks. Please drive safely. We will be on, like I said, 6 o'clock is when LSU baseball pregame supposed to start. We'll be monitoring things from Alec Box Stadium and get you the latest when we know them. Was talking about rookie minicamp for the Saints tomorrow. We saw a lot of the players getting their helmets, some equipment, gearing up for this weekend. And yeah, you start seeing things all around the NFL with teams doing their rookie camps going on, and just excited to be back in Saintsville since there's a whole lot of new stuff going on.
Yeah, you get these guys into town for the first time, or I assume for the first time, at least officially, and you can sign your contracts. So that's what happened.
Yeah, we heard in the Sports Flash that 6 of the Saints' 9 draft picks have inked their deals. Not in the mix currently. Quarterback Tyler Shuck, the defensive lineman Vernon Broughton, and who is the third one?
Jonas Sanker,
the safety.
Yes.
So other than that, the other draft picks are, you know, signed, sealed, delivered, and ready to go for tomorrow. I would imagine we still will see the other three in action. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, they'll be out there. It's usually, you know, those day two picks, there tends to be a little bit more negotiating in terms of guaranteed money on the back end of those deals Jaden Higgins with the Texans kind of reset the precedent for those contracts. He's the first NFL player ever to sign a fully guaranteed contract as a second round pick. So now, if you're a second round pick, which was always, you know, if you recall, like Alante Taylor took forever to sign his contract.
That's what I thought of that right
Isaiah
away.
Foskey took forever to sign his contract. It is not unusual. It's actually the norm for the second round picks to drag out a little more. And now if you're a second round pick and you're negotiating, be like, I want that guy's deal. I want the fully guaranteed contract, especially if you're a quarterback, right? Like, you're putting a lot on my shoulders on day one with this team. I should at least have my contract guaranteed. I think that's the minimum. So, you know, I don't know if I'm any second round pick, that's what I'm pushing for. But they'll be out there. It's usually, I'm sure they have to sign a waiver of some kind to practice despite not being officially signed to a contract. But it's the agents going back and forth with the team, and the players are just getting ready.
Action in the NBA playoffs last night. We saw the T-Wolves taking down the Golden State Warriors. Wasn't really a close matchup, and I didn't think it was going to be really good for Golden State, considering no Steph in the mix. And, man, I know they are hoping that Curry gets back sooner rather than later to take a turn from the Saints.
Yeah, if the Warriors won that game, I would start to, like, call BS. It's like someone's doing something, because that would have been, like, what, 8 games without a home team winning? That's the first home team to win a game in this round of the playoffs. The Cavs have lost
two. OKC won the other night.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
You're right.
They tied up the series.
So, you know, what are we, 6-2 now? 6-2 for the road team. But, yeah, the Cavs are down 0-2. The Celtics are down 0-2. The Warriors or the Timberwolves lost game one. And the Thunder lost game one. So those two series are tied up. But we do not have a single higher seed leading in their playoff matchup after two games. And that's unusual, to say the least.
Looking at things tonight, Jeff, we got the Pacers hosting the Cavs, like you mentioned. Indiana surprising a lot of folks, up 2-0 in that series. They're back in Indy now after taking 2 in Cleveland. And then Nuggets and Thunder, they're tied up 1-1. The game 3 in Denver this evening. That'll be the 9 o'clock tip-off, the late game. Always great for kicking back and talking out watching the late game.
And those two, like, so the second loss by the Cavs and both losses by the Celtics, it's just been like, they just gave games away, right? I mean, you have a 20-point lead in the second half of both of those games, and you blow it if you're the Celtics. The Cavs led by 7 in, like, the final 60 seconds of that game. I didn't even think it was possible to blow a 7-point lead like the way they did, you know, and you know, Tyrese Halliburton. It's so funny when situations like that happen, because Tyrese Halliburton has been getting like, oh, he's overrated. And now he's getting all the praise. The only reason he was in position to hit a game winner is because he missed a free throw in a clutch situation and then got his own rebound. It's always funny. It's like, if he missing that free throw, if he doesn't get the rebound, it's like, wow, he's not clutch. Instead, he gets the rebound and he makes a three. And like, oh, he's so clutch. But it's like, he missed a free throw. If he was clutch, he would have made the free throw. Never had anyway. I just think it's funny how those things work. Like, you're a razor's edge from, you know, being the goat or being the scapegoat.
You know, obviously been following this Celtics squad all season long.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And well, I mean, they
actually haven't been paying that close attention because it's been boring. It was kind of like, oh, we're going to get to the playoffs.
Like chucking up a bunch of threes and been making them, and just like you mentioned, these leads that they've been squandering late. It's like, what happened in the fourth quarter to the Celts?
Well, I mean, I think what the Knicks' game plan is, like, hey, we're going to take away threes throughout the course of the game, stop you from getting into a rhythm, and then we're going to give you threes at the end, and we're just going to hope you're cold and miss. And that's what's happened each of the last two games. Like, they're doing what the Magic did, which is they're switching everything. They're not leaving shooters, and they're daring the Celtics to win on the inside, and they have been doing that. But then, you know, it's kind of like Dan Campbell and the Lions. Like, when you have a philosophy that gets you to a point and suddenly you're in those big moments, are you going to stick to it? Or are you going to bail and be like, ah, we have a better chance of scoring if we go to the rim? You know, the Lions, like, if we go on fourth down, that's our thing. So then you get into the playoffs in this big high leverage opportunity. It's like, you're still going to do that because that's what you do. You can't be a coward now, but that's what got you to that point. But when you look at it in the Celtics case, and it's like, man, if you just like took a couple layups, you probably would have won that game, won both of those games. So yeah, I still think they win the series, but I think you kind of get back to the thing with the Celtics of like, why didn't they win a title before last year? It was because they every series that should have been over in five went to six. Every series that should have been over in six went to seven. And then by the time they got to the finals, they were exhausted. I think that's what you're going to have again.
So game three in New York is tomorrow.
Yeah. You I think that's a must win for the Knicks.
You know MSG is going to be rocking.
And they're going to be so sad when they lose by 30.
You said that last for game two.
No. I mean, they weren't in New York in game two.
I thought you said the Celtics were going to win game
they
two should've. By 30.
They've led both games by 20. They're the better team. They just need to stop doing their thing. Anyway.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. Coming up this hour, we're going to be talking to Nick Friedell, NBA insider. Help us break that all down with the NBA playoffs. Also, the upcoming draft lottery on Monday. Talking about some of those prospects other than Cooper Flagg, who you want to be familiar with. Then the 5 o'clock hour, we'll get to some Saints rookie camp preview. Matthew Paris, Saints beat reporter for the Times, picking you an advocate, will join us. And hopefully at 6, we'll get to some LSU baseball pregame coverage as they get ready to host the Hogs in Alec Box Stadium. Big SEC matchup for the Tigers. We'll be talking about that and a whole lot more. You can tune in on the chime in on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, 504-260-1870. Be back with more after this. Stay tuned on this rainy Friday on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, getting ready to talk to Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedell coming up soon. Want to check in with our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line right now, though. Walter on the West Bank, you're first up on this Friday. What you got for us today, Walter?
Okay, guys, I got to ask you a question, okay? And Vegas is pretty right. For the last 2 years, they won or two games. Vegas predicts the Saints to win their division plus 800. You put up $100 to win 800.
Right.
Saints haven't had that in the last 10 years. Well, they predict the Saints to be that bad. They predict to win something like 6.5 games this year.
Yeah,
because they think Carr's not playing and we're going to go with a rookie quarterback. You think that's why the odds are so bad?
Yeah, the odds right now for the Saints to win the NFC South are 7-1. Carolina Panthers 4-1. Atlanta Falcons 2-1. And those defending back-to-back-to-back-to-back champs, Tampa Bay, even odds.
Yeah, I just think there's not a lot of confidence in the Saints right now. Which why would you have confidence in the Saints if you're Vegas, right? Now, if you can be an optimistic Saints fan all you want, and I root for the Saints to win the NFC South. If you've already given up on winning the NFC South, why bother? But I mean, yeah, if I'm sitting in a casino in Nevada, I'm like, oh yeah, that's throwing money away, right?
For putting money on the Saints?
Yeah, I mean it's a good bet if you're like doing a long odds bet.
Yeah.
I don't think if you're looking for a 8-1 bet that could potentially pay off big and isn't outside of the realm. But there aren't that many plus 800
like, oh,
bets.
Tampa's got the South on lock.
Right. Like, I mean, they've won it with, 9 wins, 10 wins?
Right.
I think they're primed for a regression, to be completely honest. But, you know,
yeah, hopefully Baker goes boom.
There are worse ways to throw away $20, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, as long as you're not putting the kids' tuition on it.
Yeah. Don't do that. But no, I mean, like, go look at all the plus 800 bets that, like, there's some really bad bets you can make for those odds. Like, at least this is one that you could say has a chance of happening because you just got to win games in bunches. Like, you need to get on a winning streak. It's something the Saints have just never done since Sean Payton retired, is win like 3+ games in a row.
Looking at some teams to win their division that have steeper odds than the Saints, you got the New York Giants 20-1. Las Vegas Raiders are a 16-1. Tennessee Titans 8-1. Not that big of a difference, but Cleveland Browns 22-1, and the New York Jets are 10-1.
Yeah, when you come in last in your division, you're not going to get good odds to win it the following year. That's a solid rule. It doesn't mean you won't.
Right.
But yeah, I think the only 3-game winning streak the Saints have been on since Sean Payton retired was weeks 15 through 17 in the 2022 season. It was that run where you beat the Browns and the Eagles, and there was one other team in there the week prior. Like, that was the only time they won 3 games in a row in the entirety of the Dennis Allen era, which is crazy. Like, you went 9-8 one season.
Right.
You still couldn't win 3 games in that season. You won 4-5, but there was that loss sandwiched in there to the Rams. So, I mean, that's like, to win your division, you have to get on a winning streak at some point. You don't have to win 8 games in a row. You don't have to win 10 games in a row. You don't have to go 14-3. But
you
do.
Figure 10 wins, you do need to have that 10 win total.
You need to have at least, like mathematically.
Yeah.
You could go 2-1, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1 and get there. But in most cases, you need to get on a run. And this Saints season, they're going to have an easy schedule. And anytime you finish fourth in your division, unless you're the Giants, you're going to have one of the easiest schedules. The Giants don't have the luxury of playing themselves, so that's why they do not have an easy schedule, and they play in the NFC East against the Cowboys and the Eagles and the Commanders. But the Saints don't do that. The Saints play a Falcons team that everyone loves, but I don't buy. Until the Falcons prove to me they can have a winning record.
No, they need to prove it for sure.
They haven't had a winning record since 2017. Think about that. It's been a decade since the Falcons have won 9 games in a season.
Charlie, what'd you want to say?
Yeah, Vegas doesn't buy the Falcons either. As far as Walter's over-under win total, the Saints and Panthers are both at 6.5,
yeah.
Falcons at 7.5, and the Buccaneers at 9.5 via BetMGM, guys.
Yeah, Las Vegas, man. They do a good job. That's why they got all those fancy hotels out there.
Yeah, they make money. You know, they're not in the business of losing money. The funny thing is, like, the Saints, at what point would you feel safe as a Saints fan, if you won the first 2 games? Usually at 2-0 start, you'd be like, oh, we're going to do big things. Well, they started 2-0 each of the last 2 years.
The bruised and battered black and gold fans don't get too excited right now. They know better.
No, and after that game in Dallas, you were like, oh, this is it. This is the year.
I was ready to go as Clint Kubiak for Halloween.
Yeah, and a 2-0 start in the Kellen Moore era would be nice. But I think we'd have to wait before. I think we've been hurt too many times.
Yes.
Like, we've arrived.
We were all damaged.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some NBA playoff chatter with Odyssey insider Nick Friedell. So stay tuned right after this on WWL.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are chatting about the NBA playoffs going on right now, and also Monday, the draft lottery. Hopefully those ping pong balls fall in the Pelicans' favor. To help us break it all down, one of our favorites, Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedell. Insider Call is brought to you by Hyundai, where you put your safety first and everything else second. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Nick, how you doing today, man? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great, and it's always great to be with you guys.
I appreciate you, man. And like, we're looking at these playoffs in the second round, we're, you know, kind of nutty with these home teams. We're not being so successful early on. We've gotten a few wins now, but seeing what's happened with the Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics have easily been the biggest surprise right now, the second round of this NBA playoffs going on.
Completely. I mean, I the Cavs, I was never that high on.
Right.
I've never believed that they were going to get all the way through the East, and especially with the injuries that they're dealing with now, it feels like a really, really rough place for them to try to get through this series against the Pacers. The Celtics thing, that just stuns me, because I have believed and still believe, as we get set for Game 3 here tomorrow, the Celtics are just a better team than the Knicks, top to bottom. Talent-wise, they match up well. They have, you would think, what can slow down New York, but the Knicks have toughness. Over and over, we have seen them go down 20 in these games, and they start knocking down shots. Jalen Brunson is an unbelievably clutch player. It's why he won the award in the league this season. But when you watch them, you think, I just can't get over the fact that they're missing all these shots, and you would think that there'd be a regression back to the mean for both sides. So the Cleveland one, that was a complete meltdown in Game 2. They do not look like a team that is ready-made to go roll through Indiana four games straight and get the series back. The Boston one is a shocker, but I still think they have enough talent to get through this series, but that means that tomorrow at Madison Square Garden is going to be an insane atmosphere, and it's going to be really, really tough for them to do it.
Yeah, I've seen some memes comparing the current Cavs to the Hawks rosters that won all those games and never did anything in the playoffs, the Jeff Teague Hawks, and it's like they're in danger of becoming that if they don't, you know, turn things around in this series. What do you make of the Kristaps Porzingis situation? It just seems so bizarre to not know in this big of a moment why the star center that you paid all that money and kind of is the X factor, in my opinion, that is impossible to match up with, is just, you know, not able to play. Like he's not visibly ailing, but apparently he's having upper respiratory issues. I don't know. It just seems like such a bizarre side plot to what has been this terrible collapse of these last two games.
It is, and I think the point is very well taken, because the issue for the Celtics, and we saw it certainly at times last year when they went all the way and won, Porzingis brings just a completely different element to that team. He stretches out the floor. He can knock shots down from the outside. He can get in front of guys because he is such a big body. And to not really know, it's just weird. It's a weird situation. But in the moment, they just have to go with what they have and go with who's available and who's healthy enough to get out there. But I'm with you in this sense. In this day and age, it's just a weird situation to see this kind of thing play out. But the Celtics have enough talent that even without Porzingis, if they made a couple more shots in both of these games, we're not even having the conversation, because they've gotten through one and two. They did what they were supposed to do. But now you've got to figure, if he doesn't come back, I mean, I keep saying I think Boston's going to win and Boston's going to do it. But if he doesn't come back at that same level we're used to seeing, well, then you start to believe that maybe this is the next time, and maybe we are headed for a New York in the Eastern Conference Finals again in the postseason like we did in the good old days.
Yeah, you know, and the 25 for 100 from three-point range for the Celtics is not only wild, it's also an NBA record for the most taken threes and missed threes in a two-game stretch. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk this year about, is all this three-point shooting bad for the game? I don't know. I don't know if it's bad for the game necessarily, but what do you think? I think it's boring to watch. Like, I think one of the reasons it can be hard to sell the NBA at times is, like, it becomes a three-point shooting competition. Because, like you said, like, the Celtics make a couple of these threes, they win both these games, but it's still like, you know, okay, you have a wide-open lane to the hoop, but you're just standing there bricking your 10th three of the night if you're Jason Tatum. I don't know. Like, I think the product does suffer to some extent when you are just chucking threes the way the Celtics do.
I absolutely agree, especially aesthetically, the way the game is played now. And this is certainly deeper than just the Celtics in this moment. But we've seen it for the last few years, guys. I mean, teams just chuck up threes. The analytics say three is more than two. And
yeah, even if it's not wrong,
you three pointers, then keep chucking. You know, they'll fall down eventually. For the viewer, though, and for the fan who's sitting in the arena, it does look a little bit boring. What I would say as the counterpoint specific to the Celtics conversation now is it's so clear the intensity is so much different in the playoffs, and it's tangible when you're watching these games on the television. It just matters a little bit more to all these guys. And to me, on top of the three-point issue, which is a very, very large problem in the regular season, the NBA has got to find some way to ramp up the intensity level just a little bit in these regular season games so that they look more like these postseason games. I don't remember if it was Mike Breen or one of the other announcers in the last couple of weeks, but he said playoff basketball looks like a different sport. And it really is the truth. And I think part of that is the intensity, and part of it is we're not seeing as many threes, but to what we're talking about with Boston, that is the game plan. That is how they choose to operate, and they are going to live and die by the three, and through two games, they've died by it.
Nick, looking at the West side of things, Thunder and Nuggets, Timberwolves and Warriors all evened up at a game apiece. Denver was able to steal that one game in OKC and then just got throttled in the second matchup. And when we saw for the Warriors Steph Curry go down, figured things weren't going to be easy for Golden State now going forward in that series. But the Timberwolves still not looking that impressive.
They are not. And if you're a Warriors fan, guys, all you have to hope is that they can find a way to win one of these next two in San Francisco. Because if you do that, you open up the runway a little bit more for Steph to potentially return. The thing that scares me for the Warriors, though, if you're dealing with a hamstring injury, and certainly we've seen it in the NBA, but this is anywhere. This is the NFL. This is baseball. If you've got a hamstring injury, that is just about the trickiest thing that you can have to come back from, especially in this short of a timeline. Because if this were the regular season, I'd step out at a minimum 2-3 weeks, because they're not going to mess with it, because they're going to say, we don't want him to re-injure it and then sit out longer. Of course, the postseason changes the elements there a little bit, but I just don't know when he does return, if he's able to come back in this series, if he even looks the same, because his game is built on cutting and shooting from all over the place and changing direction. And when you've got a hamstring injury, that is a real big problem. So I think the Warriors are in trouble. As much as I like Jimmy Butler and the core of that team, even though Minnesota has looked great. And on the other side, OKC has been so good for so long this season. I think that Jokic can get one of these games in Denver. To me, guys, he's still the best player in the game. It would just still surprise me if OKC didn't find a way to win this series and at least get themselves to the Western Conference Finals.
Insider Call is brought to you by Hyundai. Hyundai helps protect you and your family on the road. We put your safety first and everything else second.
Nick, I'm going to hop in here. The draft lottery is officially a couple nights away. On Monday night, it's going to be a big one. I want to get your thoughts on some of the top prospects. I know we've had you on before. It's a really good draft class, which is like the shining light of the Pelicans having a 21-win season this past year, is that they're likely going to get a stud prospect at the top of the draft, especially if they get lucky and roll the 50-50 and get into the top four. But first and foremost, we've talked to you already a little bit about Cooper Flagg, the quote-unquote gold chip prospect of this draft class. I just want to get your evaluation of him and what makes him so special.
Totally. I think the key with Cooper Flagg is when you watch him play, he plays already at this age like the top tier stars in the league, in that he can get to the rim, he can hit from the outside, he's a difference maker in a variety of different areas. And I think the best way to answer the question about Flagg, for people who haven't paid as much attention to the college game, when you start talking to NBA personnel across the league, and Cooper Flagg's name gets brought up, the list of people that they'd be willing to trade right now to get him is very, very long. There just aren't a lot of guys that are like him and can have that type of immediate impact. And when you're in those kind of draft situations, those are the guys that you look for the most. We saw in the hype with Wembanyama a couple years ago. Certainly, y'all understand down there in New Orleans what Zion could be. I don't think he's going to be that player anymore, but the hype that comes when you get that type of guy and how quickly things can change when it happens. Cooper Flagg, when he comes in the NBA, is instantly going to be one of the very best players. And it is crazy to think that it could happen that fast for him to elevate, but that is what NBA people are banking on, that not only is he really, really good right now and he's going to help a team immediately, 2 or 3 years from right now, if he can stay healthy, he is going to be one of the very best stars that the NBA offers.
A 12.5% chance, Nick, for those lottery balls to fall the Pelicans' way, and I will be dreaming about
it. That's all it takes.
Oh, yeah, it really is. But, I mean, I wanted to also get your thoughts because you talked about the folks that don't necessarily pay attention to college hoops. And what's really fascinating about this draft class is because it's so highly touted, but at the same time, the next two guys on the list for a lot of folks, at least number two, is kind of solidified, I think, with Dylan Harper from Rutgers, but Ace Bailey, the forward from Rutgers as well. Like, Rutgers was terrible this past year. They didn't even make the NCAA tournament. For the folks that watched Duke get all the way to the Final Four, you kind of got a little bit of an experience of Cooper Flagg, even if you didn't pay attention during the regular season. But for the folks that didn't get a chance to watch Rutgers this year, I want to get your thoughts first and foremost on Dylan Harper, the point guard, the big point guard, the son of Ron Harper. He's got the NBA bloodlines there. But I want to get your thoughts on him because it feels like he's established himself as that number two guy in this draft.
There's no question. And Charlie, when you watch Harper play, he has the ability to hit you a little bit from the outside, but he can be physical. He can get to the rim. And I think the bloodline part is key because if you have been in an NBA setting all your life as the son of Ron Harper and you know what to expect when you get into the league, I don't think the learning curve then becomes as great as it usually is for any top prospect. So I think that is a part of it. But the point about Rutgers is important here because if you have Dylan Harper, who it seems is going to be the number two pick, and Ace Bailey, we'll see where he falls in the top five, the top 10, wherever. How in the world is that team still so bad this year? I mean, that's what scares me. We saw Ben Simmons 2 years back at LSU, and we see how his career has played out after a really good start. But the flip side is, Ant Edwards at Georgia, they really didn't do much, and that dude is unbelievable. So that factors into all of this as well. As far as Harper and Bailey, give me Harper from what I've seen every single time. Bailey has the talent. You wonder when you watch him if he has the ability in the NBA to do it night after night after night. And that is the difference, guys, to me. When you watch Cooper Flagg, there's not much of a question that he's going to be able to put those type of performances together every night. With Harper, he has that type of talent to learn how to be that guy every night. After that, that's where I think the drop-off becomes, at least for any star player, that's going to be able to have that type of immediate impact that any team wants when they get those high picks.
And then with Bailey, right before we let you run, Nick, I mean, I've seen some tape on him. My friend and I have different like thoughts on what his NBA comp is. I talked with you about this off-air that, you know, his measurement at next week's combine, which is going to be in your backyard in Chicago, is going to be a huge deal. If he comes in at 6'8", like that's a lot different than him coming in at 6'10". Because I don't know about you, but when I watch him, I kind of see BI a little bit. Like they always talk about, oh, the shot selection with Ace Bailey's kind of up in the air. He takes a lot of tough shots, but he also is pretty good at making those tough shots. And he's got an advanced game offensively, but you know, it goes back to like the analytics of the shots that he's taking. Just want to get your thoughts on Ace Bailey as well.
Well, I think Bailey has the ability, but Charlie, again, that's what scares me. And I mean, you and I have talked about BI for several years now. a really, really talented player. But do you know exactly what you're getting from him every single time? I mean, Brandon Ingram, if Bailey can hit close to where Brandon Ingram is, more power to him. That makes a lot of sense. I just don't think Bailey is that type of player or has shown to be yet. And he's got the talent to kind of piece it together. But again, when you talk to the scouts, you talk to the people that watch Rutgers a lot during the regular season, they said there were nights when he showed you all the different things that he could do and was really, really talented. And then there were nights that he just kind of disappeared. And those are the nights that would scare any draft person in the league, because what you need from any type of prospect is the consistency to deliver, even if you're not knocking down those shots, play some defense, do other things. And that's what scares me the most about Bailey. He is not ready-made, certainly, like Cooper Flagg, but I don't even think it's that close between where he's at and where his teammate Harper's at from Rutgers.
Nick, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Love hearing you break down ball, and have a great weekend, man.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
That was Odyssey Sports NBA Insider Nick Friedell. Insider Calls brought to you by Hyundai. We put your safety first and everything else second. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Taking a break. Be back with more sports talk. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Waiting to hear more on LSU baseball. Supposed to be a 6:30 first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame coverage. Right now, that's still on. We'll keep updating you here on Sports Talk. Heading to the top of the hour news break and be back with more talking Saints rookie camp with Matthew Parris of the Times-Picayune coming up after the break. So stay tuned here on WWL.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Welcome on into our Friday edition of Sports Talk, May the 9th. Tomorrow, Jeff and I will all be at Saints Rookie Minicamp. Looking forward to seeing all the new prospects in action. Of course, the biggest one that everybody's going to be asking about, the quarterback, of course, the most important position in the NFL. That's one thing I found crazy about this draft, Jeff. Obviously, they had the number one pick, 9th overall. Very exciting, very sexy. They take an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
and really not getting that much of the buzz because you took a quarterback in the second round.
Yeah, that's true. Anytime you take a quarterback in...
Well, if it was like later on, no, you're going to... Yeah, early...
I mean, they took Spencer Rattler in the fifth round last year to all anyone wanted to talk about then either. Like, if you draft a quarterback, people are going to get excited about it. I will say, you know, I've had a few people kind of be like, why aren't people as excited about Tyler Shuck to worry about Spencer Rattler? And, you know, I think part of it is just it was very performative last year of like they drafted... you could have drafted literally anybody. And it was more about like, I don't like Derek Carr, so I'm going to... hype up. I'm going to gas up this guy. And it just happened to be someone who was easy to gas up in the sense that we all know his name. And he was, you know, once talked about as the number one overall pick. Obviously, that didn't happen. And, you know, he transferred to South Carolina. He was Caleb Williams who took his job and all that, this and that and the other thing. But, you know, it's just how it is. Quarterbacks make the money because they make the team go, because they make the engine run. And, you know, I'm not even, that wasn't even an intentional Car pun, but it just was. And it, whether he's the quarterback or not, you know, and that's the thing, like we talked about this a little bit on the podcast the other day, but like
which podcast would that be?
I think it's called Inside Black and Gold.
Inside Black and Gold, you should check it out.
But no, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Derek Carr comes back, right? Like he's I don't think Derek wants to have surgery. I don't think anyone wants to have surgery. Yeah. So if the doctors say, like, hey, you can rehab this without surgery, the Saints are going to want to get some money out of their investment and bring him in. But, like, you try to envision what that would be like. Walking out, if the season opener is at home and you walk out in the Superdome turf, what's the crowd going to be like? What's the reception going to be like? Are people going to be excited for Derek?
Sorry, I don't see it
happening. It's hard to imagine.
Right.
Now, if he went out and won a game, like, 40-7... be like, oh, great. But like, hey, we saw that movie last year. So it won't be like, oh, okay, we've got it figured out because we saw how quickly it can go off the tracks. If he goes out week two, great. Do it again. And then I'll be like, ah, it's going to fall off the tracks again. And so I don't know. It's just an ugly scenario set up. And whether it's Tyler Shuck, whether it's Spencer Rattler, I just think it's in the best interest of this team to set a new course at the quarterback position. Yeah, I just do. Like as much as
they might not have a choice either.
As much, yeah, right. And as much as the investment is there, and you've already signed those checks, like I understand why you would want to get your money out of that. I just don't think it's worth it. I really don't.
Maybe you could help Miss Benson sell some cars at her dealership.
I don't know. Whatever Derek wants to do, let him do it. Just do it somewhere else. Yeah, I'm just. It's been an unsuccessful mission. It is like there's the sunken cost fallacy at play here to a degree that I have never experienced it, right? If you were a stock trader, you would be so far in the hole and like, yeah, it's gonna bounce back event. No, it's not. It's not gonna bounce back. Cut your losses. That's what I would do. That is my suggestion. And we're gonna see. And all this is to say, like, I think people should be excited about Tyler Shuck because I think Tyler Shuck is a good quarterback. And I think he has the tools to be a successful quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But it's going to be such a weird conversation to have if you get to the first day of training camp and Derek's there.
Yeah.
Because I think people are just assuming he's not going to be there.
Talking about a guy that knows something about quarterback and Drew Brees, he joined us this week on Wednesday talking about all things Saints. Also, he's got some endeavors in the business world. We know Surge Entertainment, the grand opening happening there with all those arcades and laser tag. There's a go-kart track being built there as well. Excited to check that out with Drew. But Brees, we asked him about, you know, first off, the hiring of Kellen Moore, new head coach in town. What's he think about the new boss of the black and gold?
I've been really impressed with Kellen, and everyone in the building seems to be really impressed with him as well. Kellen Moore was a great quarterback in his own right. I mean, you talk about a guy who came out of college football with what, like a 52-3 record, you know, playing for Boise State. I remember watching him play back in college, and it was one of those things where Boise State was always punching well above their their weight, playing against some teams that you thought they had no business being on the field with, and they would find ways to win games every year that you just you had to admire. And Kellen Moore was the quarterback and at the helm in a lot of those big games. So here's a guy who's kind of used to being a little bit of the underdog, maybe used to being you know, kind of sold a little bit short. And yet he came into the NFL. I think it was obvious that he had a bright future as a coach, has kind of worked his way up from being a quarterback coach to a play caller. And think he's been in some really unique situations with some other great coaches and great offensive minds. So I can see how he's developed kind of his philosophy. And I think just the things that he's implemented just within the building, as I talk to scouts and I talk to players and I talk to other coaches, I think he's really kind of instantly made a big impact, and guys have a ton of respect for him, and I think are really excited to play for him.
Drew Brees talking about new head coach Kellen Moore there. That's one QB in the building. The other one is also the rookie they drafted in the second round, Tyler Shuck. Drew Brees' thoughts on the new guy, the new signal caller for the black and gold.
To me, here's a guy who comes in with a ton of maturity. He's had to battle through a lot of adversity. You know, he's been exposed to a lot of college football. He's gotten a ton of experience. And I think spending that last year in Louisville with Jeff Rom, I think was probably like that, you know, tipping point for him, that where he was able to kind of combine his experience and kind of all that he had to, you know, battle through, all of a sudden now being with a coach who's a great developer of quarterbacks and a great system. And man, I just see some of the throws that he made last year, and he's a big, strong guy who's tough, who will stand in the pocket, who will take hits. Obviously a great athlete, you know, for his size as well. But man, you just see him making some throws that are pretty rare, pretty unique, great anticipation, good arm strength. I think more so than anything, I just think there's a level of maturity. He comes in and he's probably not going to act like a rookie or sound like a rookie, just given the amount of experience that he has. You know, what is he, 24, 25 years old? So, you know, I think he comes in really well equipped.
Drew Brees talking about Tyler Shuck there. Was also asked about, you know, the possibility of the rookie starting week one because of the uncertainty with Derek Carr's shoulder situation.
It seems like everything's been pretty, you know, pretty hush-hush. I mean, hopefully there's been very clear communication between Derek and the organization. I really hope there has been. You know, I've reached out to Derek just to check on him, you know, genuinely as a friend, you know, hoping that everything's okay and hoping that, you know, he's able to get healthy and be able to play. But, you know, look, you're always preparing for the future, you know, so whether the drafting of Tyler Shuck was because, hey, we really think we need a guy who, you know, can come in and start for us this year or push Derek Carr, or, hey, it's you know, we're just thinking about the future. Regardless, a lot of times, hey, you see a player that you really like and you see that he's in a great value position in the draft, you know, you're going to take him anyway. So bottom line is I think they got the guy that they wanted. The Saints got the guy that they wanted. They got the guy that they had their eye on and that they thought really, really highly of and feel like he can be a solution for him, you know, into the future. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I hope Derek's healthy. At the end of the day, I hope it's an unbelievable quarterback competition where they bring out the best in each other, because I think that goes for every position. You know, every position, especially with a new head coach coming in, needs to be, hey, each and every one of you guys has to prove it to me. You have to, even the veteran guys, you have to prove why you still deserve to be in the position you are as a starter, as a leader on this team. You got to prove it to me. And then young guys, you know, we're going to develop you. You know, you find a way to contribute and a way to bring value to this team, because, you know, this division's wide open and we need to go win this thing.
We need to go win this thing. Love to hear that from Drew Still talking about the Saints. You know, we went earlier about the odds right now winning the NFC South. Not the greatest, but Drew Brees, you know, we heard him talking about Kellen Moore now. When he was here for Super Bowl, it was still all up in the air, where it was like it looked like the Eagles offensive coordinator was the favorite for the gig, but nothing was set in stone at that time because they still had a game to play.
Yeah. Well, what's the question?
No, I was just saying with, you know, we heard from Drew Brees now and Kellen Moore, a little bit of Tyler Shuck, and also sure, the Derek Carr situation. I was telling you when I heard him going back over that answer with Derek Carr, shame on me for not going back when he said he reached out to Derek, you know, as a friend just to see how he's doing. I was like, well, what'd he say?
He wouldn't have told you. And he also didn't say that Derek responded.
Responded, right.
So who knows? But he also said, I hope that there's been clear communication. So clearly he hasn't been told there's been clear communication. But no, I think he's on the nose there with, like, it has to be a competition. And that's the only issue I have with the idea that, okay, if Derek's healthy, he's the starter. Because even Drew's saying there, like, no, it's a new coaching era. No one should walk into a job. They should have to earn that job. And there's certain guys that you expect, okay, no one's beating out DeMario Davis for the starting linebacker spot, you know. But at the same time, there should be some level of like, no one's being handed anything. But, and I think that's been the resentment to Derek a little bit, is like, he kind of walked into this situation, and it has never been in question of, like, is he going to be the guy? And you paid him like the guy, so you're going to play him like the guy. But I don't know. Are we still in them? Are we still there? Is that where we are after four seasons of missed playoffs? You know, very high profile discomfort, if you want to use that word, in the locker room and kind of the situation as a whole. I don't know, but I appreciated what Drew said about Tyler, because I think he's right, and I think that's what you see on tape. If you actually go look at the tape, is a guy who makes a lot of really impressive throws and can make really impressive throws from a lot of different angles. You know, he's one of those guys that can kind of drop arm slots and make a throw from a different location if just to get it off. You know, he said he grew up watching Matthew Stafford. That's kind of a guy he modeled some of his game after. And you can see that's what Matthew Stafford does really, really well, is change arm slots. And you just got to get the ball there sometimes. I think, you know, when you have a guy that is committed, you know, you feel like he's going to put the work in, has the traits you want. You know, while the success has not been elite in terms of, he had 1 year at Louisville where he put up good numbers, you know, you feel like he has progressed throughout his career. He's athletic. He can run. He didn't get asked to run a lot at Louisville, but he did at Texas Tech and Oregon. So, now I agree with a lot of what Drew said. And I think, you know, we've heard from Archie Manning. We've heard from Drew Brees. There's a lot of high-profile support for this kid right now.
We're going to take a break, get back with more of our Saints rookie minicamp preview. Matthew Paris from the Times-Picayune and Advocate will join us after the break. Want to let everyone know, as we head out, due to the inclement weather in the area, there will not be a 6:30 first pitch for LSU baseball. An updated start time will be provided when it becomes available, so stay tuned right here. We will have that game for you whenever it does go off, and we'll definitely let you know when those times are set for Game 1 LSU baseball taking on Arkansas. Meanwhile, we'll take a break right now. Be back right after this, so stay tuned on WWL.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. We've been breaking down Saints rookie minicamp. We'll get access to that tomorrow to help us talk more about the black and gold. We're going to welcome in now Matthew Paris, Saints beat reporter for the Times-Picayune and the Advocate. How you been doing this rainy Friday, Matt?
I'm doing well, staying in mostly, but it's been good.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to being back in the Saints facility tomorrow. It is the weekend, and we could be, you know, spending time doing something else, but it's a whole new regime here being brought in for the Saints, and a lot of exciting time to see, first off, just what's going to be different out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Saints have really, we were talking about this on our podcast the other day, and Luke brought it up, and it was a really great point. Like, the Saints have really kind of practiced the same way for the last 20 years with Sean Payton, and then Dennis Allen had kind of a similar routine. We saw something a little different under Darren Rizzi, but, you know, this is a chance for Kellen Moore, to lay out his foundation and, have his staff go about the way he wants things to be done. So we'll see if things are a little different. It'll be interesting to see.
What has your impression of Kellen been? You know, obviously we all had our opinions that we developed over the course of, like, oh, who's going to be the head coach? And you watch him go through the playoffs. We haven't talked to him that much. He's had a few availabilities. But, you know, what has been kind of your read on how he's handled this process? You know, obviously you've spent the last couple of years dealing with Dennis Allen and Darren Rizzi, and now it is kind of that new era.
Well, did you use the word process intentionally there? Because that's one of the things that stands out about Kellen Moore, is he loves that word. But you do get the sense that things are, you know, in all seriousness, actually going to be a process, that he has a very specific way. I think he wants his players to be a little bit more versatile than maybe some of the other past staff here. You do get the sense that he is a sharp football mind. Like, we haven't really asked him a lot of questions about kind of how he sees the game, but when we have, he dives into some of that stuff. And so, it'll be interesting to see how he interacts with players, because so far
the audience that we've gotten in with is really just, you know, kind of in front of the media. And he's a little bit buttoned up there, but it'll be interesting to see if he's more relaxed, more, you know, outgoing and engaging. You know, he's a very nice guy, but I think still a little bit more reserved in a media setting so far.
Looking at the Saints' first-round pick this year, Kelvin Banks Jr., taken 9th overall. Just curious your take on the big man from Texas, another addition to the Saints' offensive line, definitely needed, and just curious to where you think he might slot in. Is it going to be left tackle on this O-line?
Yeah, I would think it would be left tackle. You know, Kellen Moore said, even though he didn't say, you know, he kept it to the best five are going to play.
Right.
He did say that they looked, that they saw him as a tackle. That's where he played in college. I think tomorrow is going to be kind of a real tipping hand of where they see him, because if you remember last year in rookie minicamp, they had Talese Fuaga playing left tackle, and that's kind of what they stuck him with throughout the year. So unless the staff is dramatically different, I think the position we see Banks in tomorrow is going to be a strong indication of at least how they view him initially. But I do really like the pick. You know, talking to people, I talked to Kyle Flood, the offensive coordinator and offensive line coach at Texas. He said that, you know, Banks was kind of a cornerstone piece for them, and that, you know, he was the guy that really helped build their program. Was apparent right away that he was going to be their left tackle. So if he can replicate that type of success for the Saints, it's a home run. It's just, you know, how does his game translate to the next level?
Yeah, I think moving him to right tackle wouldn't make – to me, it's like if I'm going to switch positions, I want to do it now. I don't want to play one guy at right tackle, one guy at left tackle, and then get to the end of the season and be like, actually, let's flip that around. You guys are going to change spots. Yeah. So I don't know. I kind of feel like you want to make that decision and stick to it and allow those guys to build. And that's true for Trevor Penning as well. You know, obviously this would be his, if he moves in and competes at guard, it would be his third position in 3 years. But I just think you don't benefit anything from being non-committal about where a guy's going to play. Where do you land on that in terms of just guys? You know, obviously there's some level of cross-training you want. You probably will want to get Kelvin Banks reps at guard, even if you are planning to play him at tackle. But I think you do want to be consistent with a young guy in terms of where he's going to play.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's something Kellen Moore also said, is that, you know, they want to start off not overloading information with these guys. They want to keep it simple at the beginning so they get their feet about them. And I do think, you know, keeping them with one position. And then also the other thing, like, you switch it if it goes bad. You know, if you did in theory want to try him on right tackle, or you could tell that he's not playing tackle well in the NFL, like in training camp, then you try him at guard. Like, you let him try one thing first, and if that doesn't succeed, then you tinker about a little bit. It reminds me of Brandon Scherff in Washington. He's, you know, they picked him in the top five in 2015. He ended up being a guard, but that first training camp, he was a tackle. Now, it did not go well for him in that camp. They moved him to guard, but then he turned out to be an all-pro guard for them. So, you know, I would try Banks first at tackle and see how he does, and if he can't hold up there, then, you know, maybe you talk about shifting him inside.
Yeah, I mean, Andres Pete's another good example of that. The Saints didn't draft Andres Pete at 13 overall to be a guard, but he ultimately was a very successful guard for them.
Right.
Looking at the quarterback position, that's been the biggest buzz with this black and gold bunch after the draft. Tyler Shuck, everybody started, you know, studying Louisville film and his time at Texas Tech and Oregon as well. Just curious what you've seen from the young man, and what were you looking forward to seeing just from him tomorrow at the rookie camp? I know I just want to see how the ball comes off his hands and basically what command of the offense we can at least get some little idea in tomorrow's practice. But this Saints QB situation is definitely a puzzling one because of the unknown status of Derek Carr.
It is, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if you're really going to be able to tell this through rookie minicamp tomorrow, but I do think it's interesting is how does he command the offense? Because, you know, he played in three different types of schemes in college. You know, Oregon's offense was
pretty different than Texas Tech. And Louisville, you know, was a pro style offense, which I know the coaches here, you know, raved about in terms of, you know, they think he's ready for the next level because of that in part. And so, you know, I think he's a smart guy. He has a really big arm. Maybe we'll see that. I would caution, you know, don't read too much into rookie minicamp. Just if he lights the world on fire, that's, you know, that's a good sign, but it's not, oh my God, this guy needs to start over Derek Carr. You know, rookie minicamp is still rookie minicamp, but there are some things to read into it. It'll be interesting to see if the hype train grows at all, because, you know, among the Saints fan base anyway, that pick was kind of polarizing, but I know the Saints are excited to have him.
I don't know what you're talking about. Shedeur Sanders is already a star. I heard that after he walked out as one of the last players at rookie minicamp in Cleveland. We can decide those things. I'm just kidding. But I fully intend to overreact as far as I'm concerned. You know, one of the things I've been trying to do, I always put out like a way too early roster projection right after rookie minicamp. And, you know, it's usually a little easier in the middle to figure it out. But I look at the defensive line position this year, and I have no idea where it's going to go, whether you're going to lean on some of the players who have been here. You know, you have a guy like Jonah Williams showing up, players that Brandon Staley has brought in, even like a Chris Rumpf, a guy he's familiar with. What's the level of commitment to some of the guys who have been here versus some of these new players? Are you going to be as committed to an Isaiah Foskey in the new regime as you were with the old regime? I don't know. To me personally, that seems like a really interesting position, and we'll only see one edge rusher out there, or at least one drafted edge rusher in Fadila Diggs. But where do you think that's going? Like, how do you feel about that position in general in terms of how it's going to develop in this new scheme?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest. I don't really understand what they were trying to do at defensive tackle this offseason. I get the trade for Godshaw. You know, you want your big nose tackle on your scheme. You get that. But then bringing back Shepard and Saunders, I think they're fine players, but I guess that was maybe more cap maneuvering too, because they both are going to cost you. You get them cheaper or a lower cap hit anyway this year by at least extending Shepard and restructuring Saunders. But I don't really get, like, the Vernon Braun pick is still a little confusing. I'm going to be interested to see where he plays. Maybe he lines up more as a 3-4 defensive end for them rather than just like a defensive tackle. But then where does he play in nickel? Like, that is a position, you know, as you mentioned, Jeff, like that needs to shake itself out. And I'm not totally out on it. I'd be interested to hear more of the thought process on it.
Matthew, I know you guys do some extensive coverage of the Saints at NOLA.com. What can folks find on the website right now? What stories you got out that they need to be checking out as we head into rookie minicamp?
Yeah, I have a bit of a primer on this rookie minicamp this weekend. And, you know, if you're confused about the Derek Carr story and what's going on there, I have a pretty thorough timeline of, you know, when it all started and what's happened. And I encourage people to check that out if you have any questions about what's going on with Derek Carr.
Definitely, man. Appreciate your time. And we'll talk to you tomorrow at Saints minicamp. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Matthew Paris, Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, joining us there. Covers the Saints. Check out his work at NOLA.com. Going to take a break. Be back with more of Sports Talk. Remember, LSU baseball has been a delayed start. We still don't have an exact start time yet, but it will not be 6:30. So we'll be back with more of Sports Talk right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Back here in our rainy Friday edition of Sports Talk, talking about our Bet365 triple option feature with Charlie Long. You're the leadoff man today.
Guys, I know the game's not tonight. Game 3 at MSG is going to be played tomorrow, but there was a stat that I saw that's just incredible, and it kind of encapsulates what this Knicks-Celtics series has been through the first two games at TD Garden. The time leading in the series so far, guys, the Boston Celtics, out of 101 minutes, because, you know, the 96 combined between the two games and then game 1 went to OT, out of the 101 minutes, Boston's led for 81 minutes and 4 seconds. The Knicks have led for 12 minutes and 15 seconds. The rest of the time, it's been a tie. The Knicks lead the series, though, 2-0, guys. And we talked with Nick Friedell. He had kind of echoed the same sentiments as, like, Ryan Horvat from yesterday, that they're not really hitting the panic button just yet for Boston. Boston's been better on the road this year. But, man, like, for any basketball fan, game 3 at MSG tomorrow, tune in.
Looking at the golf links for me, guys, young Charlie Woods, not ready. He is unsuccessful on his second attempt to qualify for the U.S. Open. The 16-year-old, he carded a 3-over par at Wellington Golf Club, the son of the 15-time major champion Tiger Woods, 7 strokes over the required score of 68. He did show improvement, though. Last year, he fired 9-over at the Legacy Golf Club and Tennis Club in Port St. Lucie, Florida. He rebounded to qualify for the U.S. Junior Amateur, although he missed the cut in that tournament by 18 strokes. So we'll see if the force is strong with Charlie Woods eventually, but right now, the 16-year-old still on the shelf.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
All right. So, we'll talk more about this as we go. I think we're staying on. So I've spent some time today going through the UDFA class and kind of getting my eyes on some of them. You know, it can be tough to find tape of Elliot Davison, you know, a safety at UTSA. But, the guy who stood out to me in terms of, like, we're going to see him out there, and I think people are going to be impressed who probably haven't watched him a lot, is Marcus Yarns, the running back out of Delaware. He's 5'11", but he plays a lot bigger than that. He's got really good long speed. You know, he's a one-cut guy, not a ton of wiggle. But, you know, he could be what Jamal Williams was supposed to be. I think he could be that physical guy who can kind of get downhill. So I don't know. Like, I think this running back room is kind of wide open for the Saints. You know, obviously you have a 6th-round pick in there, but a 6th-round pick is not exactly he's definitely going to make this roster. We've talked about it before in Devin Neal. I think Devin Neal is going to be a guy people like as well. But
yeah, he's got a lot of buzz around
him. I think Marcus is going to have something to say about this running back competition. And I think it's wide open. I don't think Kendre Miller is guaranteed a job. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is definitely not guaranteed a job. Jordan Mims is not guaranteed a job. So if one of these guys shows up and is the Pierre Thomas mold, right? A guy who just does a little bit of everything, works hard. I think you could see someone find their way into this new scheme that maybe you aren't expecting. And Marcus Yarns would be – he's not my pick to make the roster as a UDFA, but he's probably my dark horse pick right now that not a lot of people are talking about.
That wraps up our triple option feature. Want to remind everybody, 6:30 first pitch, no longer for LSU baseball. We're going to find out still from the LSU Sports Radio Network the start time for game one between the Tigers and the Arkansas Razorbacks. So keep it locked right here on WWL. We'll let you know when we do. Be back after the break right after this. Keep it locked right here on WWL. If you're looking for LSU baseball, we will have that game whenever it does get underway. Right now, we know that 6:30 start time ain't happening this evening, but LSU has not released an official first pitch yet for tonight's game. Looking at the rest of the matchups for the weekend, we'll have game two tomorrow, 5:30 first pitch, 5 o'clock pregame coverage, then game three on Sunday, 2:30 pregame with a 3 o'clock first pitch, WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Go Tigers. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news, and we'll be back with even more sports talk for you coming to you on this rainy Friday. We're waiting to find out when LSU and Arkansas are going to get that game underway. So be back right after this on WWL. Oh, the rain keeps on coming down this Friday here in New Orleans. It was a tough drive getting to the studio and looking out the window as we see the city. It's still coming down pretty hard. And the LSU baseball game, still no official start time from the Tigers. Supposed to be a 6:30 first pitch. We know that's not happening, but no new word on any updated first pitch for the Bayou Bengals versus Arkansas tonight. We'll see where that's headed. We've been talking a lot about Saints rookie minicamp, though, which got underway today. We saw a bunch of the players in the facility getting their equipment on. Tyler Shuck making those throws, which I know we'll be keeping an eye on tomorrow, too. That slow-mo video of, you know, dropping back, throwing the football will be wow. A must-view for all Hoodats.
Look at that arm.
Rookie camp, right. And
what
I don't
a
know,
dime.
We talked about it a little because you saw some stuff from Cleveland Browns folks getting a little overhyped about Shedeur Sanders and what he was doing at their rookie mini camp. I get that folks are excited about these new players and what they bring to a franchise, but, oh, man, just don't oversell everything.
Here's the thing. As fans, I want you to get excited. Get excited. Be excited. As media members, I get tired of, like you know what you're doing, and that's attention farming, which is like, oh, man, Shedeur Sanders was one of the last people to leave the Browns facility today. That means he's committed. Well, first of all, you didn't say he was the last one to leave.
One up, right.
So clearly someone's more committed than him.
Or that he was perfect on the day throwing the football. It's like, come on, man.
It's like, this is the, you know, if you got to pass go to make $100. Or how does that work? Because that's Monopoly, right? I don't know. I've never played Monopoly.
Get out of here.
I'm not a Monopoly guy. I don't enjoy it. It's not my game of choice.
But like growing up, you must have played the game of Monopoly.
I hated it. I played it one time. I tipped over the board. And
you were that guy.
Yeah. They asked me to be the banker, and I said, no, I don't want to be the banker. We'll take your money. Anyway.
See, I was always fighting to be the race car and then tried to get Boardwalk, of course, and build up the expensive properties.
I remember I always wanted to be the thimble because I was young enough that I could like wear the thimble. Anyway, I just outed myself as having played Monopoly.
There you go,
what
right.
am I going to do now? But no, I mean, it's rookie minicamp. It is the most basic form of the most basic things you can do as an NFL player. It's a situation that if you can do all the things they ask you to do, fantastic. You move on to the next step. If you struggle with the things you're asked to do this week, then that's a problem. Like, being able to do it is, it's like, okay, great, congratulations. Everyone has to be able to do this. So that's really it. I think it's more of just like weeding out people who shouldn't be here.
And hopefully that's none of your draft picks.
Right. Hopefully it's none of your draft picks. There's also, I want to say 16 tryout players. I don't have the list in front of me. You do. Can you pass that along? Yeah. You probably did. I think I probably
Come
have
on.
It. Sorry. There's 16 tryout players. You know, there's a few that are interesting. You know, tryout players typically don't make the roster, but we have an hour that we didn't expect to have, so we're going to talk about the tryout players. You know, so there's 41 players in total. There's 9 draft picks. There's 11 undrafted free agents. You have 5 players under contract who are coming back to rookie minicamp, and that's Travion Fuellen, the cornerback from last year's, Xavien Valade, a running back. Josiah Ezrim was a draft pick from last year, was a tackle. Trayton Welch, the tight end, and Michael Jacobson making his 3rd consecutive appearance at a rookie minicamp. But the tryout players, one in particular kind of stands out, and it's Donovan Peoples-Jones, is the wide receiver. He went to Michigan. He was a 6th-round pick back in 2020. You know, and the reason it stands out is there's, I think, the Saints, one of their needs as a team right now is a bigger-bodied wide receiver who can be physical at the point of a catch and make plays. And so I don't think Donovan Peoples-Jones is going to make the roster, but I do think you're going to continue to see the Saints try to fill that role. And, you know, maybe this is a stab at saying, hey, let's see what he has. He started with the Browns. He was a 6th-round pick of the Browns. Spent the last 2 years with the Lions. He last played in 2023 for the Lions. His best year, I think, was 2022. He had about 800 yards, 3 touchdowns. Never really made it as a receiver in the NFL, but does have a skill set that maybe the Saints could take advantage of. And I think, you know, when I say that, keep in mind that throwing him on the practice squad in one of those veteran slots that you can elevate him at some point throughout the season is definitely a successful version of what can happen with a tryout player.
You're looking at some of the other names on there. What stood out to me, Javon Bird. Is that any relation
He's
to
not.
Jarris?
I
no, huh?
Yeah. I looked that up. But he is you know,
a defensive back. That's why I was like, I wonder if, you know, any relation here.
I thought the same thing when I saw it. It was one of the first, like, the Northern Illinois put out a tweet saying, like, congrats, he's been invited to rookie minicamp. So I looked it up then. He is not. Chris Tyree is also not related to David Tyree. Looked that up as well. He is a wide receiver out of Virginia, wide receiver running back, but they do have him listed as a wide receiver. He's a funny guy. When I was looking up his highlights, and just to kind of get an idea of what he looks like on the field, it was just funny because I could only find Notre Dame highlights. I could not find any Virginia highlights. But every single catch, because this is just kind of a reel of like a bunch of catches, every single time they would be like, former running back Chris Tyree catches the ball. They could not say his name without being like, he was a former running back.
Almost like when, you know, back in the day of Jimmy Graham's, you know, the former basketball player.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Or like every time Kramer Robertson touched the field, it's like, you know, that's Kim Mulkey's son. I was like, wait, really? Whoa.
I had no idea.
I hadn't heard that on every single LSU baseball broadcast. Anyway, so not related to Chris Tyree, but he is a former running back. But Hunter Deckers, is that name familiar to you in any way? Do you recognize that name?
We talked about it a little, so now, you know, things are coming back, but go ahead and explain story.
So Hunter Deckers is kind of fascinating. He was once a highly touted quarterback prospect. He was over at Iowa State. He was the backup to Brock Purdy, at Iowa State. Yes, the Brock Purdy of the NFL. He was the Mr. Irrelevant. Now he's a starting quarterback for the 49ers.
About to get paid.
He was going to take over that role, but then he got in trouble for putting – I think he put a bunch of bets down illegally. He was too young at the time to be gambling. But he bet a $15 on an Iowa State game that he did not play in. The NCAA found out about it. It was this whole gambling probe. This was back before, like, you know, you still can't bet on games now, but it was before it became this massive, you know, before the Caesars Superdome and whatnot. But actually, it might not have been before the Caesars Superdome. Don't quote me on that. Either way, this was like 2019, I want to say. 2022, I've lost track. My computer's updating right now, so I can't even Google this. I'm going off memory alone. But he was banned from the NCAA, ended up going to Iowa Western Community College to finish out his college career, and now he's taking a shot at the NFL. So kind of a, I don't know if cool is the word for it, because I'm sure it was a devastating experience for him to, you know, lose out on the ability to even play college football. But just kind of an interesting situation just in general.
Yeah, it was something I brought up to you when we first got in here, the fact that I didn't see the other quarterback on this sheet to begin with, and I was like, I thought it was a little odd. I was like, I can't believe that Tyler Shuck's the only QB they're bringing in for this minicamp. But like you mentioned, there is Deckers around, but there's going to be only two QBs there, so another body.
A lot of throws for Shuck and Deckers.
Shuck it up.
Yep. Shuck it up. Yeah, the tryouts, there's really, you know, there's some fun names in the sense of I enjoy saying Eric Cumberbatch and, you know, Brandon Brown and Chris Carpenter. Like, there's a couple UTSA guys. Patrick Jenkins, a defensive lineman out of Tulane, Marrero kid, he will be one of the tryout players. So, you know, some interesting names. And then obviously the UDFAs. We mentioned Marcus Jones in the last hour. James Burnup, the punter out of Alabama, I think he's going to be your punter next year.
There's been a lot of buzz around punter this year, which is funny.
And Mucci Dixon, who I think reminds me a little bit of Khalil Shakir. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be Khalil Shakir in the NFL, but that's his kind of game. You know, he does, gets a lot of work on kind of in cuts over the middle of the field. He's a fast guy. I wouldn't say he is a burner, but, you know, like I wouldn't say Khalil Shakir is a burner, but I think he uses his speed pretty well. He kind of throttles up, throttles down. He makes plays over the middle of the field. So I think he's going to be a guy that people see make plays in the preseason and get excited about. Maybe a practice squad guy. Torricelli Simpkins III, the guard out of South Carolina. Interesting player, big bodied. You know, I wouldn't say he wins all the time, but he never seems to lose. And by that I mean, you know, stalemating as an offensive lineman is a good thing. Like, you want to play even and win some reps. You just can't get driven into your quarterback's lap in pass protection. You can't get driven back off the line in run blocking and get your running back eaten up. And what I appreciate there is he's always fighting. He's just a kind of a vicious blocker, really athletic. So, you know, this is a team that I think someone's got to win the guard spot. You need depth at guard. You have guys like Dylan Radins. Maybe Trevor Penning works in there. Will Clapp, probably your backup center. He could play guard too. Landon Young, a tackle who was converted to guard. So, you know, like when I look at UDFAs, I say, okay, who could possibly make the roster? Like these two, the edge rusher, Jasheen Davis, and the defensive end out of Tennessee, Omari Thomas. Like the defensive end edge rusher spot is loaded with players. Like, I just don't see a route for a UDFA to make the roster. Whereas, you know, some of these other guys, maybe. You know, a guard, maybe.
Right, we talked about on Inside Black and Gold that punter spot, you only have one guy you're competing against.
Yeah, I don't have to outrun the bear, I just have to outrun you.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know? So yeah, I mean, you only have to beat out one guy, and that one guy isn't, you know, Thomas Morstead, right? Like, when you moved on from Thomas Morstead, it was stunning because it was like, oh, that's Thomas Morstead. He's been here forever. He is the guy. And then, you know, went to Blake Gillikin and we were like, oh, maybe he'll be the guy for the next 10 years. But they moved on from him pretty unceremoniously. And he's still out there punting pretty well. It's not like he's doing nothing. You know, they went to Lou Headley, then they went to Matt Hayball, and why not? Just try. You've dealt with a rookie punter each of the last 2 years. It's not like you're afraid of doing that. So, you know, I think you're going to see him out there. He's got a cannon for a leg. I was impressed. You know, I watched some of his punts. It's hard to find a lot of film of the punter. But he had a couple really incredible games at Alabama. You know, and what's impressive is how often it seems like the returner wants nothing to do with fielding his punts. And that means that he's able to mask the direction very well. You know, you'll see him kind of shift his feet late, you know, because you're setting up one way and the returner kind of sees that. And so, I don't know. I think there's a lot of nuance to his game that is impressive for, you know, a guy coming in as a rookie. But, and it's not like Matt Hayball's been in the league for 5 years. He's going to be a second year pro.
Mentioned this on Inside Black and Gold podcast too. Curious to see more of the corner Dallas Beanham,
yep,
from South Dakota State, 6'1", 200 pounds, good size there. Could be that nickel role that you're looking to fill right now.
Yeah, he was another guy I could not find any tape on. Not a ton of South Dakota State film rolling around the old YouTube. There's cornerback, defensive back. I think anytime you can contribute as a special teamer,
right,
you have a chance to make the roster. And
have
I think
to.
That's right. Why it's a lot easier at times for, say, a Rico Payton last year to make the roster, because you knew he was going to contribute on special teams regardless. When you're looking at a Mucci Dixon, you know, is all, you know, he's 6'1", 187. Can he make a tackle? Can he be out there as a gunner or a jammer? Like, I don't know. Did he even do that in college? I don't know. I do know that Dallas Beanham, that Elliot Davison, the kid out of UTSA, you know, even, you know, Tyreem Powell out of Rutgers, you know, these guys, I can throw them on the field in coverage and kick coverage, which is going to be a very important part of the game this year with the changes to the kickoff, and feel like, okay, they can go out and do that, you know, and if they can also contribute in at their natural position, great. But I don't know. What's the use of your sixth wide receiver if he cannot contribute on special teams? And just to say, Tyreem Powell is interesting. A linebacker, he's 6'5", 252. I think he's more of he's kind of a tweener. And that's when you look at the UDFAs a lot of times, especially on defense, you find tweeners. You know, like,
right,
he's,
where do they fit?
He's 6'5", 252. That's too big to be an inside linebacker. But he also doesn't have the build to be an outside linebacker. But he is kind of an intriguing piece. Like, you can kind of move him around. I think he's a guy who could land on the practice squad, and you develop him and into more of an edge-rushing mold. Because when you watch him at Rutgers, you know, he just never quits on a play. He's always chasing stuff down. I don't think he has the foot speed to be a inside linebacker. But you give him a couple years, you put on a little extra weight, bulk up a little bit, and suddenly you could have an edge rusher. So, you know, there's going to be some interesting guys to watch. I just don't know if there's roster spots for him.
We were talking about the overhyping some things at rookie minicamp, and I'm just seeing now on Twitter a tweet with a video of Cam Ward throwing the football saying, Cam Ward will be special. The Titans have found their franchise QB.
He can throw a football.
He can throw it.
Whoa. Who saw that coming? He can spin it. Oh, that's my favorite one. Oh, yeah, that kid can spin it. Like, they all spin it. If you show me the quarterback's ball's not spinning on him.
Another one for me when breaking down quarterbacks, he can make all the throws. And, like, shouldn't they all be able to do that?
Yeah, well, they should. Some guys can, some guys can't. That's one I actually like. But people say that about people, and then I'm like, but can he though? Can he make all the throws? Or are you just saying that because it sounds cool coming out? But Tyler Shuck, he can make all the, you know, I'm just,
that's even
say.
Like draft time when breaking down prospects, you hear people say he's very athletic. And it's, really?
Yeah.
That's one that I hate that terminology during draft time.
My favorite one is, I think it's a Chris Collinsworth one that he says, he's like, that guy's a football player. I'm like, oh, is he?
Really?
Good. I was worried we drafted a soccer player.
We are waiting to find out when LSU baseball will get underway. The game one against Arkansas was supposed to be a 6:30 start, but weather has postponed that. Still waiting to hear from the school when we will get a first pitch underway tonight, or will we even get that game in tonight? We might have a doubleheader tomorrow. We'll find out. When we do, we'll let you know. Going to take a break here on Sports Talk. What you doing this rainy Friday, folks? Sound off on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Me, Jeff, and Charlie will be here, 504-260-1870. Saints, NBA playoffs, LSU baseball, whatever you want to sound off on, chime in right here on WWL. Be back after the break. Back here Friday night, Sports Talk. LSU baseball delayed against Arkansas. Getting word from some folks, too, that the players have loaded up into their bus and made their way back to their hotel. Luckily, that is just across the street from the stadium, but it doesn't appear that a start time is happening any time soon between LSU and Arkansas this evening. Guesstimations would be like 8:30, hopefully not a 9 o'clock start. Those late games are killers to me, Guy. I see you yawning already. You're killing me, Jeff.
I don't know what you're talking about. This is a radio show. You're outing me in front of the audience. My mic was muted. No one even heard me. But yeah, no, rain delay. That's like that baseball. Like I love baseball. What the rain delays are what drive me insane.
For sure.
It's the only sport. Like I guess football, you can have lightning delays. Like occasionally you'll have a delay like that. But it's just, you know, like you get so excited, you want to watch a game, then suddenly, like especially if you don't know, like a lot of people are probably tuning in.
Like, where's the game?
Like, why are we listening to these idiots? I want to hear baseball or watch baseball if you're a TV person. I don't know what that's like, but yeah.
Do you think the sponsors and donators over at LSU would ever think about building a roof over Alec Box Stadium?
No,
I don't think so either.
I don't think there's any.
Many, if any,
and I don't
domes
like,
in college baseball.
I don't like indoor baseball either. That's the problem. It's like I hate rain delays, but I also hate indoor baseball. So
I was kind of joking with assistant program director Ian Hoke earlier. Can we get some kind of invention where we get like a big tarp, like a big circus tent almost you can put over the field just for rain?
You want them to invent a tarp?
Yeah, a tarp big enough
like,
to cover
like
the baseball
field.
Like
right. One of those like parachutes that you played
yes,
with in
exactly.
school and you thought, you know, you put it down and you're like, I bet I could jump on that because it looks soft. And then you jump on it and you end up with a concussion, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it wouldn't stop the lightning issue, but it would definitely help with the rain.
Yeah, probably. That's what they should get. They should get one of those big parachute tarps, and before the game, you just go out and whoop, you put it down, and it'll hold all the air. We all know it works. I see no problems with this.
We're ready to head to Shark Tank with our million-dollar idea.
Yep.
Looking at this matchup, Arkansas, the Razorbacks, a tough squad in Alec Box Stadium here, 40-9 on the season, 17-7 in SEC play. The Tigers are 38-11 overall, 15-9 in conference action. Coach Jay Johnson on the Jay Johnson Show talked about this matchup against the Razorbacks, and here's what he had to say.
Obviously, as we head down the stretch here, Arkansas playing absolutely red hot. They sweep the Texas Longhorns in Fayetteville this past weekend, who was number one in the nation. Arkansas hits the ball well. They pitch the ball well. They lead the SEC in defense. Not a whole lot of weaknesses, once again, for Dave Van Horn and the Razorbacks coming in Friday.
No, I mean, they're a real complete team. I think they're the only team that has 40 wins in the country. I actually fully expected, not that the polls really mean anything at all, you know, other than the RPI and what the NCAA selection committee looks at, but I fully expected them to be the number one team in the country this morning. When I saw 7, I was like, man, do these guys even watch the games? You know, it's a really good team. And I'm really excited about this challenge. I'm very happy to be playing at home. I can say that for this series. And we're going to need everybody out there because it's going to require all of us, our coaches, our players, our fans, you know, to be awesome this weekend, because it should be one of the best weekends of the year. Last home weekend, last SEC home weekend, and probably playing the team playing better than anybody in the country right now.
Looking at them statistically right now, as I mentioned, they lead the SEC in fielding, so you kind of assume they're not going to come in and hurt themselves. You're going to have to beat them. And it appears Dave Van Horn has put a really elaborate pipeline to the island of Hawaii. He's got two Aloy brothers that have transferred to Arkansas. Now they're playing together for the Razorbacks, and they currently lead the team in hitting. They're two special guys. I was asked on the LSU Sports mobile app earlier today who are some of the names that fans should be looking for. I think it starts with Aloy, who we saw last year, who transferred in from Sacramento State and was one of the top shortstops in the country. Now his brother, younger brother, transfers in from BYU, and he's kind of picked up as well.
Yeah, they have a very good offense, and you know, they maybe has been a more pitching and defense dominated program the last couple years, and they've been as good as anybody if you look at the last 10 years in the SEC in terms of just consistency. But yeah, they have a good offense, very strong, very physical, hit with power. On the pitching side, it'll be a bunch of guys up to 100 miles an hour, you know, much like, you know, Tennessee's staff. A couple good left-handers, you know, starting with Zach Rude on Friday. And so it's going to be awesome and really excited. You know, if you have an anti-rain dance, let's get those going so we can play this straight up with true Friday and Saturday night games in the box.
That would be great. You know, you mentioned the strong arms, big arms for this Arkansas team. I know, regardless of who you're playing and who the personnel is, one of the keys is always to get to the bullpen. But what will we see when they open up the pen for Arkansas behind what we know is a very good group of starters?
Yeah, I think they've gone Root and then Gage Wood and then Beetlesheese, so left, right, left. And then they put Gabe Gackle, who was their Saturday starter, in the pen after Wood. Parker Coyle, one of their relievers, is coming back this weekend. Aiden Jimenez, transfer from Morgan State, you know, has really taken a good step after coming back off an injury. So there's a lot of guys they can go to, and, you know, our players want to play professional baseball. This is what you see from a pitching standpoint. So it's going to be a good weekend, and can't wait to compete in it.
Yeah, we can't wait to compete either, Coach. And unfortunately, that anti-rain dance did not work. We are in a delay for LSU baseball taking on Arkansas game one. Still no start time has been decided. Seeing reports, though, from folks on social media that the Arkansas team did get on their bus, go back to their hotel room. Don't know what exactly that means, but it definitely says to me this matchup is not starting anytime soon. Seeing some speculation, maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock kind of start time. We'll definitely keep you updated when we find out the latest. Looking at this Arkansas squad, man, just seemed like an all-around team. You got the bats, you got the pitching. Even it was mentioned by Chris Blair there in the interview with Coach, their fielding percentage, I think, is the highest in the SEC. They're not killing themselves, not making mistakes. Really tough all around. And we talked to SEC Network analyst Todd Walker, who talked about the Arkansas offense.
They're patient, and they're willing to let you self-implode if you're going to do it. But then the damage numbers are there. They've got eight players in that lineup, including this new kid, Reese Robin, that just got in the lineup. He's only got 30 plate appearances. Eight of their players have an OPS, the combination of slugging percentage and on-base percentage, of over 1,000. So if you get 1.0 or above, that's elite. And they've got eight guys in that lineup that can do that. So that kind of shows you the combination of power and patience, like walks and taking your time, but also the damage. They've got eight of those guys. So offensively, yeah, they're as good as it gets. And what that means as a group is there's just nowhere to breathe. You know, I mean, there's no easy outs where you can just pump it down the middle and take a break. And so what ends up happening is the pitchers don't last as long, you know, in a game, and it's an advantage for Arkansas. But, you know, the on the flip side, Kane Anderson just feels like Paul Skeens in that he doesn't break. He just doesn't break. I mean, he's just mentally tough. And so that's what I'm interested to see. Kane Anderson versus this Arkansas offense on Friday night. That's the matchup.
Razorbacks, number one in the SEC with a .316 team batting average. They also lead the league in hits and runs. They're third in the league with 102 home runs this season. Looking at Razorbacks pitching staff, they're number four in the SEC with a 3.75 ERA. Arkansas fifth in the league in opponent's batting average. Tonight, we're waiting to see that Cade Anderson lefty versus lefty matchup for Arkansas. They've got Zach Root on the mound for them. He's 6-3 on the season, a 3.95 ERA, 66 innings pitched, 24 walks with 92 strikeouts. We talked to the great Joe Healy of D1Baseball.com. He broke down some of the Arkansas pitching staff, especially Zach Root and what he brings to the Hogs.
Yeah, you look at the numbers on the stuff, and it's a fastball that can get up into the mid-90s, and so you think, okay, big swing and miss guy, and he does get a lot of swing and miss. He struck out 92 in 66 innings, but kind of the secret sauce for him is that he's also a guy that can get soft contact. So he doesn't have to just blow hitters away, and a lot of pitchers that rely on the strikeout pitch, you know, also have games where their pitch counts get elevated because they're going to 2-2 and 3-2 counts consistently. Well, you know, Root's a guy that, yes, he can strike guys out, but really when he's pitching well, he's sinking that fastball to where he's getting guys to pound it into the ground early in counts. And okay, if he gets a count that runs deep, he does have the stuff to come back and put a hitter away with a strikeout. But when he's really, really cruising, and I think we saw this a little bit last weekend where, yes, he struck out a bunch of guys against Texas, but also he went eight innings because his pitch count was only 99 at the end of eight innings. And so that tells you he was getting a lot of outs early in the count. So it's one of those deals where if you're LSU, you don't really necessarily want to run deep counts because Root does have the varied arsenal that can make it tough to hit with two strikes. But on the other hand, if you're aggressive early in the count, you're kind of playing into his hand, because there's a good chance you're going to pound the ball into the ground. And when you've got a pitcher that kind of makes it difficult to decide how you want to attack him, that's what makes for a special pitcher, and Root's definitely that.
Just two weekends left of SEC play, and then we get into postseason SEC tournament. Then, of course, the big one, the march to Omaha. Who's going to end up in the College World Series? Healy from D1 Baseball mentions the fact that these Hogs, Arkansas is a contender, but LSU is too.
Even when they had lost a few series in a row, I was still pretty steadfast in Arkansas's. When Arkansas is playing its game, it's the best team I've seen this year. I saw them in person against Georgia, you know, 3-4 weeks ago now, and they lost that series, and I came out of it thinking absolutely that Arkansas was the better team. Georgia just happened to get two more clutch hits than they did on the weekend, and so they lost 2 one-run games, and that was all it was. So, you know, I think we're starting to see with last weekend, Arkansas maybe wake up a little bit. I would also agree with Glenn in this regard that, you know, I've kind of thought of LSU as being on a similar plane with Arkansas in terms of, you know, quality. You know, it's Texas, Arkansas, LSU. I kind of, and maybe Tennessee has fallen off a little bit, but those three teams I've been consistent about kind of being the upper crust in the SEC. And I'm not saying a series loss here would mean LSU isn't in that group, but it is an opportunity to kind of reiterate, as people are maybe starting to question, at least offensively, LSU at this point, it is an opportunity for LSU to kind of pump the brakes on that a little bit, especially with it being a home series. You anticipate it being just an absolutely crazy crowd for this series, given the magnitude of it. And so I would agree that it is a big opportunity for LSU to prove that they are right up there with Arkansas in terms of teams that should be considered national title contenders when it's all said and done.
You know, Joe Healy mentioning the LSU offense there struggling of late. You know, it was tough in that series against Texas A&M. They lost 3-1, 6-4, and won a game 2-1. There definitely seems to be a run outage lately in the SEC play for the Bayou Bengals. They did get to run rule Tennessee a couple weeks back. That was a 12-2 matchup against the Vols there. But overall, I guess on the road, it seems like this Tiger team, the Bats, have struggled a lot more than at home. I guess that's to be expected. And just hopefully they can get things back on track, looking like that superpower that I feel like they did a lot earlier in the season. Of late, not so much.
Yeah, specifically last weekend, I think, is why a lot of people are a little bit down on the Bats, because they just didn't really do much at Bluebell Park. I mean, the pitching was good enough to win that weekend series, clearly, but you know, it's hard to win multiple matchups in the SEC when you're not breaking the four-run barrier. I mean, especially game one was bad.
Like, you hear Jay, he wants 6 runs a game.
Yeah, exactly.
He's asking for.
That's kind of what you're looking for when you have really good pitching. And LSU's got really good pitching. I know that there are questions in the bullpen outside of Cason Evans and Zach Cowan, and Zach Cowan had a bad weekend at Texas A&M as well. But they pitched well enough at Bluebell Park to win that weekend series and potentially even sweep. But the offense just didn't really show up. And so that's what's going to be key for this weekend series against Arkansas, because Arkansas has got a really good pitching staff too, Steve. They're top 5 in the SEC in multiple categories, including team ERA. But if LSU's offense can kind of retain some of the form that they showed at the end of the Tennessee series, and then you're looking at a potential series victory against the Razorbacks, which would be gigantic, you know, heading into the final week of the regular season.
For all the complaint I'm doing about the LSU batting, they still are number 2 in the SEC in team batting average with a .306 average. They also are number 4 in runs scored in the conference with 404. So just maybe a little bit of an outage last week against Texas A&M. Seeing if they can rebound against the Hogs. We're waiting to find out that start time for game one. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll return with even more, so keep it locked right here on WWL. Want to remind everybody, don't forget you can have this show delivered directly to your phone absolutely free. You can listen to all 4 hours, one specific hour, or just the hottest clips. Just download the Odyssey app and follow Bobby Hebert. It's that easy. We realize you can't always listen to this entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want and how you want. That goes for this show or any of the WWL shows that you love. Download the free Odyssey app today and take control, or just tell your smart speaker, play WWL. Still waiting on LSU baseball to give us a start time for this evening. Mentioned the fact that the Arkansas baseball team boarded their bus and went back to the hotel room. Now, it doesn't sound as bad as it maybe it doesn't, it's not as bad as that sounds because their hotel is directly across from Alec Box Stadium, but it doesn't seem like this game is getting underway anytime soon in Baton Rouge. I guess they're still experiencing a ton of rain there as well that could be detrimental to the field. The good part is, guys, I don't think that lightning is an issue tonight, but who knows?
Yeah. I don't have anything to add to that.
We'll be interesting to see tomorrow, Jeff. We're going out for Saints rookie minicamp, the conditions of the fields out at the practice facility, and if we'll be in the indoor.
I'd be surprised. At this point, with so much rain falling, I'd be surprised if the field was even playable. Like, they probably don't want to put anyone out.
Injuries. Yeah, right. Forget the field even damaging that.
Yeah, so I'd be surprised. I'd imagine it's inside. They're going to practice midday, so probably, you know, I'm not complaining, not standing out in the sun, even this time of year.
You think we'll get to go up in the balcony cafeteria area and watch practice from there?
I'd guess not. I guess that is not made for us. But they did put out a bunch of pictures from practice today, and I have some hot takes. QB1, baby. You could see it. You could see it on his face.
You could just tell.
You could just tell.
He's got the stuff.
You could sense it. This is me being sarcastic, by the way. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if there was an emoji, it'd be the one where he's like huffing, you know, like blowing smoke out of his nose
because right.
He's so, you know, that. I'm making fun of people on Twitter. That's what I'm doing.
What we're going to do is take a break here on Sports Talk. Going to hear you can sound off on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. It's 504-260-1870. We'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, wish I had some update for you folks on LSU baseball, but there has been nothing put out by the team yet about a start time for this evening's Game 1 action against Arkansas, so that's still up in the air, although pretty curious that their social media team did release the lineup for this evening, so you would think that would indicate things were starting up sometime soon.
Scheduled tweet.
Maybe, right.
That's all I have to say.
Looking at some action that is going on right now, Jeff, the Cavaliers and Pacers in Game 3 of that series. Indiana leads the series 2-0, but they are down big time right now to the Cavs early on.
Yes, 19-5 with about 7 minutes to go. It's over here on our right. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see if one or both of these series between, you know, Celtics, Knicks, Pacers, Cavs gets back to 2-2.
Right.
Because if it gets to 3, it's really not like danger zone until it gets to 3-1 or 3-2. I would not be surprised at all, just based on watching a lot of Celtics games, is if they go out, win the next three games, lose game six, and then end up, basically down to the wire at home in game seven, like it tied with 2 minutes ago, just to add drama there.
Were you surprised with this series, the Pacers and Cavs, that Indy was able to take the first two? I know a lot of folks kind of considered the Cavaliers not legit from the get-go into the playoffs.
I wouldn't say surprised. I mean, Indy's a good team. They robbed game two. Like, they lost game two. That was over. The Cavs handed it to them. So I don't know. Surprise. I mean, they have good team. They've been whenever you have a core of players that's been around as long as they have, you have to take them seriously. And the Cavs clearly just thought that game two was over.
Keep it locked on WWL. We will have that LSU baseball game for you sometime this evening when it gets underway. Jeff and I will be out at Saints rookie minicamp tomorrow. Keep it locked on WWL.com for the latest on the black and gold.